This is Near Enough to Hell, a Ghosts of El Paso story, part two. We had ended previously setting up the oncoming night phase. We're still got a few things to resolve in the dust phase, which we're going to get to momentarily. But let's review the current state of our hunters, members of the Vigilance Committee of El Paso, Texas. We have the Lost Mother Ruth Calvo, who in session one marked the Gilded Door and is now most beloved. Amazing, and also has the condition feeling watched. Graves, the inevitable, has death touch as always, and is also starving. Marshall Andrew Harrington, no conditions. And Arkansas McGee, the calamity, is hungover and marked by Doc Albers. So as a bit of a fresh recap of what happened last time, not a lot in terms of complex things to be refreshed of, but just for both the viewer and player, aid, we met the members of the Vigilance Committee of El Paso, including, we witnessed the attempted murder of committee member, a man named Bartholomew Graves, who the following day was discovered and brought into town, feverish and, you know, dying from a gunshot wound, was attended to, and came back not himself, although that is not necessarily known by the others quite yet, only that Graves is certainly behaving quite strange. Indeed, Graves is now inhabited by none other than the Pale Rider itself, Death the Grim Reaper. We also got to see a few snapshots from the everyday lives of our hunters. Mother Ruth's prayer tent interactioned with Marshall Harrington and his mysterious cellmate, an individual that only goes by Del Sol. Arkansas McGee got to wake up in the brothel he stays at, and we witnessed some various courses of investigation into the Lady in White, a haunting up on the Foothills Road that claimed the life of two wagon drivers and their horses, claiming to have, Deputy Wainwright, who was up there collecting bodies, claimed to have seen a lady in white walking off into the distance towards the old Carson homestead. And then he blacked out and woke up just walking down the street. So the current active threat is the lady in white. The question is, how can we get the lady in white to pass on to the next world? Complexity 6. We have 6 clues for that so far. We had a lot of clue finding happen last time, so we will get to that. A reminder that there is a Janice mask for the lady in white, the Mask of Lonesomeness, which is still unmarked and available. I believe that covers the essentials, so let's get right back into where we had left off. We had just done the paint the scene question for the Wounded Knight regarding the children of El Paso, and we are moving on now to... actually, let me ask you guys. I feel like on my side of the aisle here, it's like, I feel like pacing-wise, might be too soon to answer the Lady in White question, but you do have 6 clues, so if you guys feel like you want to take a stab at it for the hell of it, by all means. Otherwise, we can keep going. What do y'all think?
I thought we were thinking we needed a couple more just to cool. Tie the story to tie the narrative together.
All right.
Yeah.
Then that works for me. Then in that case, let's go in character keeper order here. Each player, please state in a sentence or so what your hunter will be doing during the upcoming night phase. After everyone goes, everyone has a chance to revise their statement. Starting with Mother Ruth Calvo. Wes?
Yeah.
Hello?
What do you want?
I was asking you, what do you want to do, Mother Ruth?
I reckon I should go and participate in the assemblage.
Oh, that's right. You did call the assembly. That's right. Wait, real quick. Yeah, that's a good point. Let's, Chaotic, if you could be so kind as to read your move, assemblage regarding the state of affairs of the township of El Paso, just so we can all be clear as to what it does and how it works for this.
You may call an assemblage during the dusk phase. If you do, say where it will be held and name the and type the name of each active threat on the line below. You may not call another assemblage until those threats are no longer active. Delete them from the lines below when they are finished. During the dusk phase, after the assemblage has been called, each other hunter must state if they will be in attendance. Any hunter in attendance can only take actions related to the assemblage during the upcoming night phase. Additionally, each hunter in attendance, including you, can name a side character who will also be in attendance. The hunter gets advantage on any associated roles with that side character. The keeper can also have any other side characters which attend the assemblage. The assemblage will take place during the night phase that follows when it is called. The keeper cannot introduce any elements that would prevent the assemblage from taking place, nor they can prevent any hunter who agrees to attend it from attending. Immediately after the first unseen prompt is resolved, you must give an opening speech related to the state affairs at the township of El Paso, then roll with presence. On a hit, the keeper will reveal one clue for each active threat over the course of the night phase. On 7 to 9, a side character in attendance will raise a fuss about a mundane issue in town, take the condition marked by a side character, which cannot not be cleared until you deal with the issue to their satisfaction or they are no longer in play. On 12 plus, the mastermind will appear at assemblage, or you will get a mastermind clue in the form of other clues. Keeper's choice. On a miss, the threat appears and terrorizes the assemblage.
That is, I think, the single biggest move that has been written in any between game. Yeah, very good. So, oh, excuse me. So, Chaotic, where will the assembly be held? And I mean, there's only one active threat, so we know it's about the Lady in White.
I think I imagine like there must be a town like hall at for El Paso or something like that.
Okay, so it'll be in, yeah, that makes sense. In the town hall. All right, then real quick, yeah, let's just go in character keeper order and state if your hunter will be in attendance for the assembly. Mother Ruth Calvo?
I myself will be in assembly. Or
Very
I'll make my
good.
way back from my investigation and stuff. The cart, Ruth knows better than to go by herself to a haunted home or anything like that. So we'll join and see what all the hubbub's about.
Sounds good. Graves, what are you thinking?
Oh, absolutely. This is too interesting.
What about Arkansas McGee?
No. Those fancy people always look at me and they look down. They look down at me. No.
Very
He's
good.
gonna go to Neil's. He's on the Bartholomew Graves case, so he's going to Neil's and.
Oh, very fun. I like that a lot. Okay, good to know. Well, then that means that Mother Ruth Calvo, Graves, and Marshall Harrington will be busy in attendance of the assemblage. I need the three of you to name a side character who will be in attendance at the assemblage. This can be from the you can ask me if you are not sure about some side character options. And I'm happy to help, and you can even make up some people. I don't know. I'm down. Let's we'll do a reverse order there. So starting with the Marshall, who which side character are you ensuring is going to be there?
Okay, so with me first.
Yes.
I'm Deputy Wainwright, of course.
Of course. Very good. All right, Deputy Wainwright, love that. Graves, who what side character is going to be in attendance there?
I don't think I know anybody.
You
I
don't.
don't.
I
So I think
mean,
I'm gonna, well,
go ahead.
I know people, but you know. But I think I'm gonna toss that off to you. Who do you think I could wrangle up?
You could mean Doc Albers.
All right. Yeah, I've met him. Let's get Doc Albers up in here. He might be fun since he's not harassing Arkansas right now.
Very good. And Mother Ruth?
Kind of a big question.
I will remind people of some of the side characters, and if this helps, that from the lady in white specifically, aside from Deputy Wainwright, there is also the general store owner that Mother Ruth you met out on the B. Tessa Schuster, and her wife Lucia Ortiz, the general store managers, who were kind of like they were getting their supplies from that wagon. You met them. There is also, I mean, there are in broader sense that, like, just giving you a litany of names. There are like people who write for the El Paso Times. There's, stuff like that. So, I mean, you got all sorts of different townsfolk you could probably call on. It doesn't have to be an established side character from a threat. You could just like come up with a character on the spot, and I'd be totally good with that as well. It just any roles that are associated with the side character that you invited are taken at advantage. And then I can also have a bunch of other people show up as well. So.
Let's get B. Tessa to show up.
Cool. Then I think it is fitting that B. Tessa and her wife Lucia will be there, and maybe some others, which I will take note of here in a moment. Very good. So Arkansas, you're going to be looking into the Graves Hunter, going to Neil's. The rest of you will be partaking in the assembly. Very good. I don't believe we have any outstanding Janus mask prompts. I think that is all swell and good. Then I'm going to assign the unseen and its prompts. We'll take a 10-minute break, give you time to think over your prompts and think over your actions for the upcoming night phase. And when we come back, we will start it. Tonight's unseen. I didn't pick this in advance, but I feel like I'm going to do it now. Let's do. B-b-b-b-b-b-b. Oh, and just as a, I mean, this is our first time doing the night phase and the unseen in Ghosts of El Paso. So I'll just go ahead and give the brief overview of this, mostly just because we have B, who is a new player in the official, between product line. Very similar to from our previous campaign of White Mountain Rescue, doing the unsolved. Those are the unseens. These explore specifically the broader parts of the American Southwest and the Wild West as a whole, outside of El Paso, other parts of Texas. They have no connections whatsoever to the affairs in El Paso. It's just our exploration of the setting. Let's do day 776 on the Central Pacific. On our unseen tab, I've marked it as active, so the top index there, it should be highlighted in red, which you can click and it'll jump you down to that section. Working on the Transcontinental Railroad has been no picnic for the three immigrants. Tonight, while politicians and rail barons spout rhetoric about connecting the East and West coasts, workers celebrate surviving another day with little more than bread and water. That first prompt is going to go to Daniel. Second prompt is going to be to Wes. Third prompt is going to be B, and the fourth will be chaotic. All right, take a moment to review your prompts. Think about your actions during the upcoming night phase. I will see you all after the break. We begin with the unseen. Daniel, whenever you're ready, I believe you have the first prompt.
Yeah, so Fong has been saving a bit of seasoning and fresh ingredients to add to the pot to share with her companions. What is she celebrating or memorializing today that she has not told anybody about? And so what she's got ground up is this red Szechuan peppercorn. It's very spicy, and it reminds her or she's celebrating it reminds her of her grandmother's cooking, but she's celebrating her grandmother's birthday, and nobody knows it's her grandmother's 90th birthday. And her grandmother is known throughout the community as like the most frugal citizen of the entire town. And the big joke is that if she buys something very big, she pays for it in like the smallest coins. And so as she puts in this packet of this red powder, she softly says her grandmother's name.
Very nice. We pan down from the rafters of the El Paso Town Hall over the assembling group of townsfolk called in by Marshal Andrew Harrington, who stands at the front on top of, I think there's, we see like a little raised wooden platform with a with a lectern on it to stand before the assembling crowd. Obviously, we see Deputy Wainwright standing off to the side of the stage, Doc Albers seated in attendance, B. Tessa Schuster and her wife, Lucia Ortiz, some of the general store owners. Also in attendance is Agatha Edwards, the owner and editor of the El Paso Times, kind of like watching from the back of the room, occasionally checking her pocket watch. She's a woman with her hair that's already pulled back in like a loose bun, dressed in a black shirt and gray blouse, and is watching with very keen-eyed interest, eyes on Marshall Harrington, Mother Ruth Calvo, and Graves. There is a glint of great interest in her eyes to see how this is going to unfold. And as well as various other townsfolk, as Andrew Harrington, you take the stage, and before the assembled people of El Paso, you have to deliver your opening speech.
Mm-hmm. All right, everyone. You might be wondering, most of you I've seen here before, some of you are new in the crowd, but I wanted to call this assemblage forth to mark the first occasion of the Wounded Knights. There is ghosts afoot in El Paso now. Currently, we are investigating an accident along the main road that was caused by a ghost we are now calling the Lady in White. If any other sorts of like occurrences that happen within the town, please deliver them to my office at the jail. If I'm not there, Deputy Wainwright will be more than likely to be there to receive any sort of news, sort of investigations. And I really hope that this time will be a little bit more peaceful, a little bit less hectic, a little less troubled to cause in our lives. Currently, if anyone has any sort of things they want to say, they are free to come up here and speak their parts. And speech.
As Andrew Harrington is speaking, we see individual close-ups on various faces of the townspeople, including Mother Ruth and Graves. What are the two of you focusing on or primarily thinking as Harrington addresses the assemblage?
I think Mother Ruth Calvo, can you please stop? Thank you. Sorry, my cat was behind my monitors, which he loves.
All the cats are misbehaving today.
It's so bad. He just knocked a bunch of stuff down. Sorry. So Mother Ruth, I think, sits down next to Graves and sits close and goes, "Mr. Graves, how are you feeling this evening?"
"Much better, Mother. How are you doing this evening?"
"You're talking with a strange timbre that suggests a newfound confidence. Has your return trip from the afterlife given you new insight?"
"I would say so. Yes. But I'm sure it's all insight you already have."
"I'm sure, perhaps. I have remembered our confessions in the past. I wondered if maybe, mayhaps, you might want to speak upon what is troubling your mind." And with a familiarity that is suggesting that she is more familiar with this Mr. Graves than maybe the Mr. Graves that is there currently, she is going to squeeze the upper thigh ever, like, suggestively, quickly, and then remove the hand, and then turn and look forward directly at Harrington.
Marshall Harrington, could you please make your roll?
Oh, goody.
Plus presence, unless you have an item you want to mark for advantage.
I think I'm good. I am good. So presents? Oh no. Oh, I'm so scared. But this is it's a good thing. It's a 12.
Fantastic. And because this is because it does say that I get or a mastermind clue, you know, it's funny because the mastermind will appear or you get a mastermind clue. Well, funny enough, the first mastermind clue is their first appearance. So, this will be quite interesting indeed. We cut away to elsewhere in El Paso, down on Santa Fe Street. Sandwiched between two abutting businesses, is a narrow sliver of a building with an entrance at the front and an exit in the back. Only a long bar that runs the length of the saloon fits inside. This is Neil's. Let's paint the scene. The owner, Neil, does not seem to have many customers. What illegal side businesses is Neil's actually a front for?
I think he sells off the back porch like stolen merchandise.
Wes, you're muted.
Sometimes push to talk works in Zoom, sometimes it doesn't. I think there is a not an underground craps game. Let me know if this is too dark, but there is an underground roulette game of a more Eastern European variety, where the stakes are higher and there is more to wager. It's not money. It's land.
I think that the less high stakes games are secretly rigged in favor of the house a lot, and it's a nice little, you know, gets his beak wet a little bit.
The question, let me re-repeat it, was the owner, Neil, does not seem to have many customers. What illegal side businesses is Neil's actually the front for?
Like, Niels is sort of brunch, as it were. It's more of a bar, but all the alcohol is just sort of piss poor, really. Like, sort of what you expect as like sort of clear shots of vodka or anything. I've been like tinged to like be like a sort of shimmery red color. Just it's like that's not right. What did you pour me?
Arkansas, as you enter Neil's, set the scene for us of what your bearing is and what your intentions are.
He looks around, and there's not hardly anybody in here, and he sees Neil at the bar, and so he starts walking towards he starts talking to the bar and just says, you know, good evening there, Neil.
Neil Willingham, the owner of the saloon, is not local. He is an entrepreneur from far away. And as he is mopping sweat from his forehead with a little cleaning rag, as you often see him, he gives you a slight smile. He is frequently found in his white shirt with tiny red pinstripes. And he says, "Ah, good evening, Mr. McGee. How can I help you?"
Yeah, how come you end up at that fancy town hall meeting?
Oh, I was anticipating an evening of, billiards, perhaps even cards, but, I figure that a proprietor's work is truly at the bar, given the propensity for folk in this township to seek whatever relief they can find, and I am ever standing here to ensure the acquisition of such vice. And also, I don't really have the temperament. There really is not very much room in this town for two Brits, and I figured my place was best here.
Hey, I just had a quick question. I'm gonna have one of those one of them red kidney bean whiskeys that you guys have here. What I don't know what you put in that, but it's
Well, for
delicious.
a start, there are indeed kidney beans in it.
Ah. And
Yes.
then I got a question about my friend who sometimes plays in here. Bartholomew Graves. He got shot all up. What, do you know anything about that? Let me have some of that. Let me just bring me the whole bottle.
And let's go back to the unseen. Wes, whenever you're ready.
Shu spent most of his day placing black powder into the solid rock of the Sierra Nevada and moving quickly before it was blasted away inch by inch. His hands shake as he takes this meager soup. A comforting memory comes to mind as he sits upon a rock near fire and puts the spoon to his lips, almost burning his tongue, but it's warm to him. He can feel it travel down his esophagus, deep into his gullet, and it fills him with a sense of comfort and warmth that reminds him of his days back when he was about 12 years old. After his father would go on a tear, drinking, take it out on he and his mother, he'd pass out in a stupor. This had happened typically most mornings or afternoons, but eventually he would pass out, and it would leave Shu and his mother to spend time amongst themselves talking and playing cards, and she'd make a nice soup for him to calm him down, tend to his wounds. Those moments always helped him go forward, especially the moment when he took a ball-peen hammer to the back of his father's head and went on his way out west.
Graves, how do you respond or otherwise react to the squeezing of your thigh?
It's not the usual reaction from Bartholomew Graves, which is not displeased. This Graves isn't displeased either, but more fascinated, befuddled, that this is even a thing that they can now participate in, and kind of gives Ruth a look like, well, now, that kind of like, all right.
You're muted, Wes.
She stares forward, but there's a slight smirk on her face.
All right.
I feel so tempted to call for a day move from Graves almost.
Okay.
Because in response to this welling up of feeling, I mean, like, again, you like this sensation of like, oh, this is a thing that I can do. This is fascinating. I mean, like, what are you afraid of happening to like, in just in the like, on the emotional level here of like reaction wise, you know, of like, what are you afraid of possibly happening here?
I think I'm afraid that I'm going to get too caught up in this human sort of in the fun little tangle of all of their lives, to quote Dr. Manhattan, not to be a fucking nerd, but I think I'm worried that I'm going to get too caught up in whoever this person was and not be able to do what I'm supposed to do as what I am.
You can roll plus composure. I'm going to give you disadvantage because you're starving. Your stomach is giving an uncomfortable grumble that is also distracting you quite severely.
Yes, this is you said composure. Oh, good. I actually have a plus in that. I almost rolled the wrong kind of dice. Okay. That is a 13.
Damn, you got your
I got a 12 and plus one. This is wasted that.
On disadvantage, you got a 12?
Oh, sorry, not a disadvantage. Good gracious, I'm a goober.
I'll say.
No, sorry. That is a 9. That makes a lot more sense. I forgot advantage. Sense. I just got excited. I saw
a 9 total. Very good.
9 total. That makes a lot more sense.
Here's what I'll tell you, right? I think obviously, you're able to maintain your concentration, right? You can pocket that away at the back of your mind and devote your attention to the rest of the scene here at play. But obviously, yeah, I think Chaotic in the chat has the thing in mind, is that it is now this I'm going to give you essentially a condition.
All right.
I guess, like, I'll let you how does Graves feel?
Trying to think of a good word for this. Enamored is maybe the correct word?
Sure.
You might think of a new one if there's a better one for this, but.
Let me look something up really quickly.
Okay.
We're going what to Google. About. Oh, hold on. There's a word.
It's thesaurus time.
What about limerence?
I don't know.
Limerence. Here, I'll get the definition. Limerence is a state of involuntary obsession with another person.
Yes.
It's different from love or lust, and that it is based in on the uncertainty of desire.
Yes! Oh, yeah. That's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, limerence. That's perfect.
All right, we're back with a full condition track.
Yeah, you are. Very good. Marshall Harrington. As you have delivered your speech, people of all sorts are speaking, presenting their issues, guiding the affairs. Wainwright by your side. Things are pretty productive. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about how, despite, because you're an outsider. Effectively, you've been here for 6 years, but you mean like you have that British accent, right? You clearly, yes. You know, you come from somewhere else. It's always a marker mm-hmm. of the fact that you're not from here. Mm-hmm. But despite that, tell us about how like Marshall Harrington still commands the respect and order of the assemblage before him, even when things might get a little rowdy. How you always bring it back to that place. Mm-hmm.
I think just making sure that people are standing in line. I think like with Americans in particular, they're very touchy, they're very feely. They want to reach out to Harrington and clasp him on the shoulder, just to get his own attention about their problems. But he just sort of redirects it to themselves, like as though like the hands just get clasped together. When Harrington needs to, he'll like sort of move people, and like they're like it's like a shock of like they're being almost herded along like sheep, and for some reason like it's just natural, like as though there's some sort of other influences at play here. Harrington has no rights to like be the marshal, but still he ended up in this role. I think we just see the comparison of like this with like how Deputy Wainwright is acting. Like that, like he's a bit of a blunder. He's very personable, very friendly with folks, but it's still like he's just a little bit awkward when it comes to Harrington. Whereas Harrington sort of almost glides across the room, Deputy Wainwright walks.
Now. Because you brought Wainwright into the picture here, any mm-hmm. actions that involve him during this assemblage, you'll take with advantage. So what is Marshall Harrington doing? You've given the speech, you got the room under control. Mm-hmm. What do we see Marshall Harrington trying to accomplish here?
I think it's more or less of like listening to the problems of people from El Paso and whatnot, trying to like discern information. Like I'm having Deputy Wainwright also like just take notes so we can like split up as like a team. So even though we're not directly being together, I think that's how he's helping me out.
Totally. I'm going to say that I'm going to go ahead and give you that clue I owe you from your Oh, wait, hold on. Does the ascent? Oh, yeah, on it. Okay, so on a hit, you get the clue. And then you also get the master. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and give you that clue. I feel like just one person, one of the townspeople here, was a witness to something strange and does share their story. They tell you about how, in their own words, they saw a woman in white at dusk walking down the foothills road. Their wagon was loaded with timber, so they stopped. And this woman hopped on the sideboard, but they can't recall when she got off. That is their kind of story they relayed to you in discussing the matters of the Wounded Knight. I'm going to say that for you and Wainwright's action, since you're splitting up and keeping, I'm not going to have this be the information move, unless you're really gung-ho for it. I was going to have this be the day move, just for the sake of like, effectively managing the room from a two-pronged approach, right? Being able to keep this all from necessarily getting a little bit wily. So that's going to be the day move plus your composure, I'd say, that would be for this case. What are you afraid of happening here?
I'm afraid, despite my best efforts, people will get a bit wily with me, and I'll get wrapped up into something I really don't care for.
All right, you may take the role with advantage because Wainwright's helping. Mother Ruth, what activities are you interested in pursuing during the assemblage? You get advantage if it involves B. Tessa Schuster.
I'm torn between my heart and my soul. In my soul, I know I should be following the investigation and everything, but in my heart, I know that Graves is probably looking to offload something. Maybe or not. I'm not going to take advantage, but I'm going to try to initiate a vulnerable move. Mechanically, I'm going to try to initiate a vulnerable move with Graves. While everyone's mingling and everything like that, I think you will see Mother Ruth stand and walk over to a door that's like a back room of this area where we're gathering and look over and just give a nod to Graves and open the door and close it, but leave it ajar.
All right. Obviously, he follows. This is too interesting. This is all too interesting to not follow.
And we cut to Niels. Arkansas, I'm going to ask you to also make the day move. This is a pretty safe night phase so far, which I am intending. But yeah, because you're kind of asking some pointed questions. And I guess, what are you afraid of happening here?
I'm afraid that Neil had Graves shot, and he's going to try to, I'm onto him, so he's going to try to, off me.
All right. You can go ahead and roll plus presence, it sounds like. You are, I wouldn't say hungover would affect you here necessarily, so you can just roll flat.
Okay. That is an eight.
An eight.
Here's the angle he's doing. I think I at first I thought I'm the one that shot Graves, because what he said about Blackheart Vermilion, God rest her soul. But then it wasn't me, and so if it was you guys, I'm just going to ask you to time out on that until we can get through this this wounded knight, and then maybe I'll help you guys shoot him.
So since you got the 7-9 result, I will tell you how your action here is going to leave you vulnerable, and then if you want to continue through with it, let me know. I think since you do succeed, if you do go through with it, I don't think Neil is involved per se. I do think how you'd be vulnerable, though, is that there are parties present here who were involved in some way, and they might be hearing you. All right, you persist. Then you will take the condition. Brown noser. Neil takes a moment and just looks at you and he says, "I did hear about that. That was an awful, terrible affair. From what I understand, he was quite feverish, but, he making a recovery, I would hope."
No, I don't think he's going to make it. He seemed like he lost a lot of blood. He's walking around, putting on a good face, but that fella looks like he's got one foot in the graves. No pun intended.
Indeed, indeed. I wish I could help you, Arkansas. You know this place better than some others. It is plenty of disreputable sorts that I allow passage through my doors and
Here? What?
utilization.
These are fine looking folk you got in here. What are you talking?
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Don't let them hear you say that. It might hurt their feelings.
And what feelings are they to hurt? You look over, and there's just some grungy cowpoke in a back shadowed alcove with a glass of whiskey. Like, what I'm about to say is gross, but I'm gonna say it anyway. Truly, like a pubic level of facial hair going on, if you know what I mean by that. Yeah. Just in like sun, like blotted skin, real like hollow kind of eyes, just a real gnarly look to this fella, just glaring at you over the hand of cards he's holding with his buddies.
I always thought this was a pretty good place. A lot of wholesome folk here. Salt of the earth, Neil. Well, anyways, he starts paying for his whiskey with these pennies that have been cut in half. These go together. There you go. I got a wagon. I got to take up this ridge. I just thought I would get a little braver before I take this wagon up there.
Yes.
This kidney bean whiskey does the trick.
His eyes are like shifting uncomfortably towards those cowpokes in the corner who like harassed you for like a brief moment, but he just like nods at you with his smile, dabs the sweat from his brow and says, yes, McGee. Yes, very good. Make your way on your wagon now. And let's go back to the unseen.
Lee never stops talking. Jokes, memories as a child, what it was like in San Francisco, made-up stories, anything to keep from thinking about here and now. What does Lee chatter on about tonight that finally gets Fong and Shu to laugh? It's ridiculous, really. There's a shared history between them all as friends, as people surviving out here. And it's humor's a way of coping for them, and they can see that their companions are more somber than even usual. Maybe for different reasons, but it's uncomfortable for Lee because they know that this is sort of the one thing they can do is, at the very least, if they can't make the situation better, they can make them laugh. And they're telling stories about people they all used to know, people they do know, and making fun of the rail barons and their bosses, and hoping that the other people here, if they hear the jokes, can understand them, all the references. And it's very anti-authoritarian. It's very subversive in a way that maybe if we weren't around a campfire with friends and people we trusted, we wouldn't be saying these things about the people in power. But that's what they start chattering about, is comparing these rail barons to blustering people that they all mutually know, and generally making fun of them. And it's frankly a bit, maybe a bit crass occasionally, but finally he just keeps ramping it up until Fong and Shu laugh, and only then does he sort of release the tension of doing his tight five for his friends.
And good. Marshall Harrington, you got a 10. Please narrate how that approach is going before an interruption occurs.
It is going well. I think we've managed to go through most of the crowd. So far, it just seems as though normal life. Some people complaining about taxes. Some people complaining about like how their own bosses could be treating themselves better or whatnot, but it's mostly just mundane businesses, some of which is more Deputy Wainwright's speed currently, because he's handling day-to-day affairs while I'm off, well, ghost hunting, I guess, or what qualifies, is it? But, yeah. Not too much meat to be found in the way of like information of like about the lady in white, besides what I found earlier. So I'm almost thankful for that because it seems as though she herself does not have a lot of influence over the town quite yet.
Indeed. Someone is steps up to you and shakes your hand for all your good service and just just some gruff townsfolk being, hey, good job, Marshall. You might be limey, but you're all right.
I guess I might be.
Agatha Edwards from the El Paso Times steps up to you and says, Marshal Harrington, pleasure, as always, to be in your attendance. Well managed as always. Now, do you have more to say about this Lady in White affair? The paper would be most intrigued for a first-hand account from the committee. Before you can speak, the doors of the town hall are opened up as heads turn on a swivel to look at who's entering. And we see the shot from the ground of two, kind of heavy work boots, clump, clump, clump. And then behind that, with a slightly raised hem of a nice, wealthy dress, the click of woman's heeled boots that walk as well. We pan up to see two figures who have walked in. The woman is in her late 20s, maybe early 30s, visibly wealthy, very nice clothes, kind of one of those little woman's over jackets that go just as low as just below the bust with the kind of the puffy shoulders, long sleeves. I'm imagining red satin, ruffled skirts, beautifully applied makeup, hair done up, curls dangling free. And standing beside her was the gentleman with the work boots. Looks like a train conductor, complete with a tidy hoghead hat, his coat, and a pocket watch that you can see the chain kind of dangling out. His hands are clasped behind his back. He slightly just kind of shifts and adjusts his collar slightly, and with a slight tug, you see that. He clearly has some kind of damage on his neck. It looks like he has burn marks along his neck slightly on top of just swollen and bruised flesh. He just kind of adjusts it kind of uncomfortably beneath the collar. And heads kind of turn, and the woman says, I didn't mean to cause such a stir. I do hope I'm not too late. Caught up in business at the office, after all, and begins to strut down the aisle. Anyone here in El Paso would know this, the woman at least, to be Isabella Reynolds. She's been in town a couple years now, buying up existing rail lines with intentions about bringing the first railroad to El Paso. As she walks down the aisle, and smiles at people, the conductor following in tow. She approaches Marshal Harrington.
Hello, Miss Reynolds.
Marshal Harrington, a pleasure as always. I'm not interrupting too late, am I?
No. It's just that I know that you are one for the dramatics, as it were.
Marshal Harrington, you know me too well. I do not wish to at all intrude upon your affairs. I, as a citizen of El Paso Township, do have an interest in expressing my thoughts and opinions, but I unfortunately do keep busy hours trying to bring the greater, wider world to this fair settlement. But please, don't let me interrupt, unless I may have the floor.
You may have the floor. I might ask you yourself, who is your companion? I've not seen him before.
She smiles and turns to look at her companion. What's going on in the back room?
It's a good question, Mother Ruth. What is going on in the back room?
So, Mother Ruth went in, left the door slightly ajar. How long did it take Graves to follow?
Like 2 seconds, honestly. As soon as you make eye contact and they read it, like, get over here, I have something to tell you. Graves is gone. This assembly is not interesting anymore.
Graves walks in, Mother Ruth closes the door and takes Graves' hat off, tosses it off on like a chest, turns Graves around, and then starts fiddling for the belt and goes, "It's time to confess, Mr. Graves. I'm sure you remember how to do that, even after your trouble this morning." And will begin to kneel and undo if Graves allows.
This is fascinating. Graves does allow themselves to be turned around, and as soon as they kind of get the message of what's going on, because they may be non-human, but they're not stupid. They've watched humanity for eons, and turns back around and takes Ruth by the shoulder with one hand and says, "I do believe I've forgotten a little bit how to confess, but I do think that maybe we have something to discuss before you do anything."
"Goodness gracious, Mr. Graves. Do I have to remind you how to do it every single time?"
"No, but I don't believe I'm the person you think I am. And I do think we maybe need some full disclosure about that."
"What game of mental chess you playing at here? All right. I'm into mood. You're here. There are other folks that I can lay with.
Oh,
Ah,
I'm
I see what
sure.
it is. You want to sit and cuddle and stroke my hair and talk about how you got so close to death. We can do that, but first I want what I want. Unless you're not going to give it to me."
I don't think I should. Not for anything you've done, Mother Ruth, but for your own sake. I know there are plenty of other people you can do this with, but I really do mean I'm not the person you think I am.
She stands, looks directly at him. "What kind of silly game you playing at there, Graves? You think I'm just some one of the floozies down at the saloon? You can go down to Neil's and pay for him if you want to."
"Oh, I'm not playing a game, Mother. I didn't just get close to death. I am. I will always be, and I think you know this. I have no interest in kneels or paying for people. I have no interest in money. But I do have an interest in you and keeping you around.
"Shall I put the gloves on then?"
Huh. All right.
We'll cut away there for a moment.
Away.
Yeah. Arkansas, you said you were grabbing a wagon and going someplace? What place would
if
that
you
be?
want, he's now I've switched from hungover to intoxicated,
Oh,
and he
yeah.
is he's got this mule on a small wagon for rented about town for the brothel, and he has taken it up the foothills road, and he is singing a song that goes a little something like this: "Where are you tonight? Why did you leave me here all alone? I searched the world over and thought I found true love. You met another and shit, you were gone. So tell me where. And he just keeps going.
Rolling down the road on your wagon, pulled by a mule, the wheels ka-thunk, 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 rocking along the dirt trail, the gravel sometimes churning underneath. As you're driving underneath the dim red lighting of that wounded knight, up ahead, you see standing at the side of the road a young woman with long black hair and a loose white dress that billows slightly in the night wind, standing off to the side, and just looks at you as you approach. Do you slow?
He slows down and tells the mule, "Slow down, mule." And then he says, where are you going, ma'am? I've been drinking, so my hands is steady."
She just looks at you very sadly, but gives this slight smile and says, "Can I have a ride?"
"Well, yeah, I'm just heading up this road for a bit.
She
Might go to Fort
nods.
Bliss. I don't even know."
She just nods and steps up into the wagon and sits next to you.
"Yeah, mule."
You take off down the road, rocking along. This woman sitting beside you, her hair blowing back past her as you continue moving through the night. What do you do?
Very conversationally, he says, "You walking around these parts at night, you ever see a striking woman on a big black horse and goes by name Blackheart Vermilion? You ever seen her up in here?"
I have.
"If you see her again, you tell her I'm looking for her. I'm looking for, did I say that? I'm looking for her."
Her voice gets very soft as she just, not looking at you, just kind of says, "She walks in beauty like the night of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright meet in her aspect and her eyes."
"So you have seen her, yeah. What are you doing up in here?"
"Just looking for a ride." She has a very sad kind of look on her face.
"Well, just let me know. And if I fall asleep, do not be afraid to wake me back up. And if I snore, I apologize."
She looks at you with those sad, sad eyes, and the faintest, genuine smile quirks at the corner of her lips, as if despite whatever weighs heavy on her heart, this old, inebriated, cowpoke son of a bitch that you are is in some way slightly endearing, but also heartbreaking to look at. And she just reaches over and lays her hand on top of yours. Cold, slightly clammy. She just looks forward out into the night. I'm gonna ask you to make the information move plus your sensitivity. Despite the fact that you're intoxicated, not disadvantage, because honestly, being drunk is probably the best state of being with which to encounter weird shit unhindered in terms of like this.
I was looking at my items. I don't think I have anything, so I'm just going to do a flat roll. 4 plus 6 is a 10, flat up.
Lot 10. Very good. Let's go to our last prompt on the unseen.
Claus cannot speak the same language as those he is sitting with tonight. But he likes the company of these three immensely. What does Claus do to try to show his appreciation and affection for Fong, Chu, and Li? I think As like the night continues and the claws is like sitting there seeing them laugh together, to be telling these like intricate jokes in a language that he can not really speak. Every so often, they offer him soup, try to just include them, but he just says very rudimentary words, try to like get the meaning across of like, yes, the soup is good, yes, I'm happy here, and I think like he's like the very, very few words that he's been trying to pick up by like just rudimentary like English, just to like have a shared language amongst these three, and he just keeps on saying, repeating the words nice, it's very nice, like he's been trying to like pick up like with his meager pay like books on like sort of just dictionaries of just like translating to try to find like a word, but out here there's not much. And especially with like his own language, he would say expects like there's more stuff for Chinese, there's more stuff for Spanish, so like it's just like just trying to find the right line of like translation books so like he could find some sort of commonality between them.
Very good. I want to resolve this vulnerable move that was proposed here in general. I think, if I am understanding the vibe correctly, things happened. Now, I do have to ask, because I am mighty curious. Did Mother Ruth Calvo touch Graves' bare flesh?
Graves will warn against this and attempt to make that not happen, but Mother Ruth Calvo is an independent human being.
If you remember beforehand, she said, "Shall I grab the gloves?" So I think before that, Mother Ruth Calvo has it's probably the nicest thing that she has, other than her cross necklace, a pair of silk gloves that she puts on. And I don't think it's a full on laying with, but I think there's a little bit of laying, as like maybe the camera would see her shoulder moving, and her going, "Talk to me
Tasteful.
about what it was you wanted to talk about. Unload your burdens."
Holy fuck it. Okay, yeah, that's incredible.
Incredible.
That's yeah, so let's cut to the aftermath of that scene. So that absolutely counts as the vulnerable move, following your advice of laying with sinners. Although goddamn. Now you do get it to choose either a clue, or you can invite Graves to ask you about Mother Calvo's past. Do you have an idea for that?
I'll stumble upon a clue. Whatever we can find in the
Okay.
back room of this building.
There's something.
All right, I'll let you think about that for a moment. How does Graves feel?
The human experience is vast and fascinating. That is how Graves feels.
Incredible.
Yeah, it kind of gets now why humans act like they do.
Arkansas, you got a 10. I'm going to give you a clue. Let me take a look at our list here. Riding through the night with this woman at your side, eventually she gets off. And it takes until whenever Arkansas is not drunk again to realize that he can't rightly recall when she got off, just only that she got off at some point. But as for the clue, me see here. I think when she had got on board at one point, she did ask very quietly, "What do I owe you for the ride?"
I was going this way anyways, nothing.
She shakes her head sadly. And you don't remember her putting it there. You don't remember her getting off. But just in your hand, you found a dented silver ring with a pearl. That is your clue. How does Arkansas's night wrap up?
He didn't remember. He just wakes up in the back of the wagon, somewhere's out in the foothills of Mount Franklin, and cussing the whole way he comes back. He makes his way back to El Paso.
In the town hall, Isabella Reynolds turns her head with a smile towards the gentleman behind her, and she says, "Oh, this is Edward, our conductor. He's going to be the one that is most actively driving the effort, literally and figurative, of course." That's right, folks. I am pleased to announce that in the very near future, the long dream of the railway coming to our fair township will come to pass. I believe I'll have the train come right down here through Main Street, right in the middle. That ought to be something, don't you think? And Edward clasped with his hands clasped behind his back, gives a reply that as he speaks, a few people gasp with a shock and a little discomfort, because the voice that comes out of him is raspy and choked and heavily damaged. And he says, "Man, I think that should be just the thing. Passengers should have no trouble disembarking there." And Isabella says, "Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Folks, all troubles aside, I just wanted to come here to say that El Paso, you, the thrumming heart of this frontier life, are soon about to have your hard work paid off. For the rails are coming to Texas, and they bring with them your vast fortunes." And there's a scattered bit of applause, and she like kind of like gives you a slight like curtsy, Marshall, like thank you for the floor, for like allowing her to talk about the railways. And Edward does step forward and says,
"Now we best be getting on. There is work to be done. Folks, as always, if you have business to discuss with myself or Isabella, you may come to our office on Main Street."
What were you going to say, Marshall?
I think Marshall was trying to ignore it, but I think once Edward started speaking, like it clicks in the Marshall's head about what those marks are, because it reminds me how he a little bit about the previous Marshall. And Mr. Harrington just thinks to himself, Edward is a very lucky man.
And Edward and Isabella step out of the town hall, leaving the assemblage just slowly begin to peter out. Deputy Wainwright comes up to you and says, "Well, I think that went well."
Yes, Wainwright, it went fairly well.
I got a number of interesting complaints from a few folk when I talked to them. It pulls out little notes. All right, we got it just begins to run you through the litany of like other little concerns that are raised in his walking of the floor, but your eyes just stay on that open front door over the heads of the people as they leave, just watching Isabella Reynolds and that conductor Edward walking down the street, conversing ever more about the train that's coming to El Paso. I think we'll end the night phase there, everybody. Move into the dawn phase. No threat was resolved, so we have no rewards to collect. But let's answer dawn questions. Mother, so there was no answering of questions or a resolution of threats, so no one marks those. Mother Ruth, did you experience an echo in the night?
I don't think this time.
All right. Did you try to convince someone to do the right thing?
Yes, yeah, earlier in the day with all the little kids, try to convince them to act right.
Very good. Did you speak on matters of theology with anyone who would listen?
Yeah, in the beginning with Harrington.
Mm-hmm. Graves, did you experience an echo in the night?
I don't think so.
Okay. Did you take time to puzzle over the human condition?
I think this counts.
I think this counts. Did you misunderstand with another character? Did you have a misunderstanding with another character because they perceived you as the host? Yes.
Multiple times.
Multiple times. Yeah, you get two experience there. Harrington, did you have an echo in the night?
Yes. The color of the drinks in Neil's bar with the color of red peppercorn.
Oh, very, yeah. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Did you stare mournfully at someone who reminds you of the old marshal? Yes, you did. Mm-hmm. That was very good just there. Did you come up with a rational explanation before accepting the supernatural truth?
Yes. He bemoans that his companions immediately jumped at the this thing being a ghost right away before we started investigating this thing, rather than coming up with rational things the last session.
Very good. That's three experience for you. And Arkansas, did you experience an echo in the night?
Yes, the money. Counting the money out to the Neils.
Did you explain to someone how soft living has spoiled them?
Doc Albers last time about his hands being so soft.
And did you complain / brag about being hungover or drunk?
Hungover last time, yeah, when the marshal woke me up.
All right, that's three experience for you, sir. You may mark new elective dawn questions if you wish, or leave either or both the same. We don't have any playbook moves that trigger during the dawn phase, it looks like. All right. And I don't believe we have any outstanding Janus mask prompts either. Okay. We're going to move into the day phase. I'm going to introduce our new threat, and we will then take a quick little break. Our new threat, the Daisy Man. I think it's been a couple of days since that assemblage was held, allowing Graves to settle into the human condition a bit more and what have you. A series of burglaries has taken place on Santa Fe Street. Gambling halls, saloons, and private safes have all been hit. The newspapers have dubbed the perpetrator the Phantom Burglar of Santa Fe Street on account of rumors suggesting the criminal was able to pull off the heists without opening doors or windows, and in one case was said to have been shot at point-blank range by a security man, but the bullet passed right through them without a scratch. Others call the burglar the Daisy Man, since the calling card of a single daisy was left at each crime scene. The children even have a new song. Daisy Man, Daisy Man, he moves through the walls. Daisy Man, you'll never hear him call. When the locks are tight and fast and the midnight hours pass, look out, Walt, he's in the vault. He's in without a blast. When you shoot right through his chest and the red should fill his vest, look out, Scout, he's still about. The Daisy Man is blessed. Mother Ruth, this is not trickery or smoke or mirrors. What detail from the newspaper stories confirms the burglar can literally walk through walls?
One of the buildings that was hit was a whorehouse in town. And literally, you could hear there were three prostitutes in separate rooms with different Johns who all claimed Daisy Man walked through the wall one by one, and downstairs the matron could hear a eek, 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 almost as in a 1, 2, 3 harmonized.
A stagecoach has just delivered a large cash deposit to the First Bank of El Paso, which will be having its grand opening any day now, a likely target for the Daisy Man. But first things first, is the Daisy Man a ghost summoned by the strange power of the Wounded Knight? Or is he a man manipulating the energy unleashed by the Wounded Knight to become incorporeal? The first question for the Daisy Man is a threshold question. Is the Daisy Man a ghost or a living person? Complexity 2. Please note that answering that will unlock one question or the other. If the Daisy Man is a living person, you'll note on our character keeper here that it gives you the opportunity to pursue a custom move, a new move that you'll have access to called Spectral Form. That's only if you decide he's a living person. Otherwise, you deal with him as you'll deal with ghosts. It's the day phase. Let's take a 5-minute break. All right, we are back in the day phase. Before we continue, Mother Ruth and Graves, you did do a vulnerable move, so you may each clear a relevant condition, which in your case, Mother Ruth, would be feeling watched. So I guess that was certainly a way to take your mind off of things. Graves, I feel like you could clear limerence. I don't see, unless your argument for clearing starving would just simply be that you ate after the fact, you know, or like you got food. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I would say that would actually make the most sense because we have had a few days pass.
Yeah. Then in that case, yeah, you can clear
and
starving.
And that one would make the most sense.
I got to ask you then, what's Death thinking of food so far?
It really likes it. This is a completely alien experience, like most human experiences, but this is like a really, everybody seems to do it all the time and it's pretty casual and it's really great. Like maybe even if the food is like garbage, like even if the first thing Death had was like the shittiest whiskey. I mean, I think the first thing it had was actually coffee, but like the first food it had was just the worst shit you've ever tasted. It's still the best thing that Death has ever tasted.
Love that. All right. Let's hear what hunters are interested in doing today. Let's start with you, Mother Ruth. What are you thinking about doing today?
I reckon I can go, now that it's daytime, I can go out to that wretched house and investigate it. If someone might like to join along.
All right. What about Graves? What do you think about doing today?
Honestly, probably looking into the Daisy Man thing, since that to Graves feels more timed, since there's an opening or what have you. So maybe checking out the bank to see if it's secure or not. Obviously, Spectral Man, but we'll see.
Marshall Harrington?
It looks like Angus McGee could use some help and probably needs a vulnerable move.
Angus McGee? You mean Arkansas?
No, Arkansas McGee. I don't know where I got Angus from.
Our real name's Charles.
I will be on record for saying I'm bad at names.
You're good.
I wouldn't mind doing a couple of vulnerable moves because I want to report back to Graves what I found.
Okay.
So I wouldn't mind doing two vulnerable scenes.
All right. So we can start with a vulnerable scene between the Marshal and Arkansas. Whose vice are we looking to indulge in? Petty theft or target practice?
Well, I have the problem here with the Calamity is that because of their primary mood is hard living. And I can't participate in other people's vices. So maybe, I don't know. My vice is target practice at the sky.
I mean, I can work that
in with Graves, but I don't know if I can work it in with.
I could see it working in of just like, I mean, like we've established from the first session that like Harrington like does the rounds like as the marshal through town and could just find you at the edge of town, just firing shots off into the sky, clearly staggering and drunk. So, I mean, that could be the opening of the scene is that's how you find Arkansas McGee intoxicated and shooting at the sky.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like it definitely because Marshall Harrington is sort of, again, the law. There has been complaints about a random drunk person shooting in town. And from the description, it sounded like Mr. McGee. And I think you see Mr. Harrington walking down the street as you are stumbling about. Mr. McGee, fine morning, is it?
He's like, he's just shooting. And then he's like, he thinks he's doing like some kind of defensive maneuvering. And then he starts throwing up.
Oh, dear.
I was trying to do my zigzags.
You might want to pace yourself. It's a little bit early for you doing this, unless you had a very late night.
No, look, I'm target practicing, and also it helps keeps Doc Albers away. He's mad at me because I called him a city slicker. But look, two hands, safety first.
Oh no, we're gonna take that down. Thank you, thank you.
He's too, if I'm too dangerous, he won't mess with me, see? And
Yeah.
I'm very dangerous, Marshall. That's why I'm on the, that's what I bring to the table.
Yes, you are very
Danger.
dangerous. You're very dangerous. You are ready to face on any ghost that may come to this town.
I feel like now you're just trying to placate me.
Well, we don't need to be disrupting the good, fine citizens of this town with your target practice.
Good citizens of El Paso? What are you
Yeah.
talking about? These are just
Yeah.
normal folks.
They're normal folks, and normal folks don't like loud noises. It spooks them a little bit.
It's got to be like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
No, it's closer to 7 a.m.
What?
Yes, you've been apparently out for a little bit last night. I may not have gone home. It's all right, to be a little bit confused. Why don't you come with me and we'll take you off to like have a little bit of a nap?
I got in business after the Daisy Man. I'm on Daisy Man case next. Done solved. Done solved, lady. What? Now it's time for the Daisy Man.
Of course, of course,
The
but
good
that
thing about Vigilance Committee, Marshall, good thing about Vigilance Committee is we take this very seriously.
Of course, and I think I take
There's
it.
a lot of people don't believe in ghosts, but we've seen them, ain't we, Marshall?
We have seen them, of course. Well, now, why don't you come along with me? And I'm going to take Mr. Keegan in jail because he's
No, I'm
too
too quick for
drunk.
you, Marshall. You can catch me, but if you do, you got to carry me. And then he just kind of like does a roll, vomits, and scrambles off into the alleys.
Is he just running away? Oh my God,
Yeah.
I have to chase him.
Can't catch me, Marshall. I know this city like my hand.
Arkansas McGee, it's the night move because you're shit faced out of your mind. What are you afraid of happening here?
He'll like go up on the boardwalk and he'll trip and he'll shoot his foot.
It's worse than that. You're then going to Oh, hold on, let me think for a moment.
I do have
Oh.
an
Oh
idea.
yeah, what's your idea?
You accidentally shoot Harrington.
Yeah, I was about to say you accidentally shoot. Yeah, I think you accidentally shoot Harrington as your pursuer.
I'm okay with that.
Then go ahead and roll plus vitality at disadvantage.
I'm gonna mark.
Why are you marking for this?
I'm not going to. You can't. I'm not going to jail. I'm gonna mark the gun that I really shouldn't have, Redemption. Because that there's no way a gun named Redemption is gonna shoot the marsh.
Go ahead and roll.
Vitality. All right, that is a 7. What is my plus 1, 8?
All right, very good. I'll get back to you once I think of that, and then the marshal goes charging off after you.
But do I get to clear? Do we
Yes,
get
you
to
do.
clear?
We had the move happen, so we can go ahead and clear. You can clear a condition of your choice. I think that since it was your vice, when we come back to you to resolve the outcome of this role, you can then let me know if you're thinking about, depending on how things go, if it's going to be like a talking with the Marshall thing or it's going to be a clue thing. So we'll get
Marshall,
back
why
to
don't you love me? That's what
you.
no.
Very good. Let's jump over to Graves, who is visiting the soon to open First Bank of El Paso. Pull up my note here. The First Bank of El Paso is a small adobe building with barred windows, nothing really fancy or noteworthy, but the inside bears hardwood floors with carpet rugs and a solid wood front desk, and the whole place smells of fresh cut timber and still drying paint. Let's paint the scene. What state of the art, circa 1880, security measures does this bank boast?
A rudimentary alarm system that you can, like, you manually pull and it alerts everyone.
Stainless steel, iron bars for the cashier. Painted in a appropriate color.
The teller, you mean?
I said what I said!
Round-the-clock guard service from some of our nation's most finest servicemen and women.
Because it's El Paso, and El Paso has dealt with ghosts before. I think on sort of the thresholds of every doorway, there has been sort of carvings of magic sigils into them.
Very good. In the room is a gentleman that is well into his 70s, Graves, almost bald, but a few long wisps of hair that tuft out from his ears, dressed in an old-fashioned pinstripe suit and a black cravat. As you walk inside, he says, "Now, I'm sorry, we are currently not open to the public yet, as I've said to many of you by now."
I'm well aware. I'm with the Vigilance Committee. I'm not here to do any banking.
Oh, yes, indeed, of course. The Vigilance Committee. I'm not sure if I've met every member. I am James Martin, the manager of the First Bank of El Paso. He holds his hand out forward to you.
And with a gloved hand, mm-hmm. Graves does take it. Graves, it's a pleasure.
How can I help you, Graves?
Well, I hear that you have a large sum coming in. And I was wondering if you had any security measures up that are for the less than corporeal.
Now, let me we have the finest security money can buy. I won't hear of this specter or phantom business. It's all lurid gossip. Our depositors have full confidence that when we open in a few days hence, we will be the safest bank this side of the Rio Grande.
Interesting. And is the money already here, or will it be happening this opening day?
The money has indeed has arrived already. It is currently in our vault.
Oh, okay.
Safe and secure, as I've already stated. Again, these robberies that have been transpiring across town may indeed be something formidable with the local law enforcement to contend with, but when it comes to matters of banking security, the First Bank of El Paso will truly be the first robbery-proof bank in the American Southwest.
I sure hope so. Have you seen any interesting folk walking around? Since we're talking about robbers, and you've said that you've encountered a few people who are trying to do business here. Have you noticed anything suspicious?
Suspicious?
Any folks sort of eyeing your security system, watching you?
Go ahead and roll the information move, plus presence, if you'd be so kind.
It's a zero, baby, for presence. Mm-hmm. Six.
We'll get back to that. Mother Ruth. Going up to the Carson Homestead. As you're walking up the Foothills Trail Road this fine morning, take a look at my thing here. You see a figure is coming. Are you walking, I should ask?
Indeed. No. Taking a morning constitution.
You hear the soft gallop of hoofs coming down your way. Coming around a bend on the Foothills Road, you see a young man on a horse that is as he kind of like turns the bend, he slows down to a trot when he sees someone walking along the road. He's dressed in a like I said, he's a younger man. He quickly throws you a very quick smile He has a stained shirt on, just like sweat stained, broad brimmed tan hat, keeping the sun out of his face. He's got a like courier's like saddle, like, you know, like kind of like the messenger bag, like pouches affixed to it. He kind of like slows down on the road and just goes, "Oh, help! Hello there!" And it just gives you a little tip of his hat as he, you know, trots his horse off to the side to give you the right of way to continue on your way.
Oh, no, me. Don't allow me to get in the way of old Wells Fargo.
Indeed, I gotta make this delivery, but you know, actually, I just saw something strange a ways back along the road. I passed a woman walking like she was heading to a wedding, but you know, just by herself. She seemed to like need help, but you know, I'm in a hurry, you know, courier business. State business, actually. But if you're heading up that way, could you just maybe see if she needs something? She looked just dreadfully sad.
Seems you best need to be getting your way on out of here now.
Oh, yes, right. Thank you for reminding me. All right. Ah, and he just continues to put up, gallops towards El Paso.
Mother Ruth is going to take a deep breath, steel herself, and then make her way towards the homestead.
The Carson Homestead. The homestead is a wreck. The roof and main timbers collapsed years ago, just caving in kind of on the end, like on the middle, sticking up at the ends, barring kind of entry from the collapse. Weeds and small brush have just grown up around the ruined farmhouse. Inside, there are just rusty farm implements, shovels, axes, rakes scattered here and there. Out behind the homestead is a small barn that is also adjacent to a neglected field of some sort. Which of these are you approaching?
Let's make our way to the barn first.
All right, you kind of walk around the back. But first, let's paint the scene. There are plenty of stories that the Carson family was plagued by misfortune. What do you see that hints at this troubled past?
The fields that are all grown up with weeds and stuff, they're very rocky, and there's hardly no soil that would grow anything other than weeds.
There are burn pits where livestock continuously got sick and had to be put away and their corpses burned so that the rest did not get sick.
You said there was a barn, right? On the side of the barn, there's what looks like old blood stains.
The earth, even though it's still freshly tilled, you can see what looks like fingers reaching out, but they are not that. They're mushrooms. Dead man's fingers.
You approach the barn. The doors to it are open, and kind of shuffling around out of it is a woman who kind of looks ancient, just heavy, weathered features, and an emaciated frame, but with like sinew, like very like lithe, sinuous, like muscle. Like clearly, this woman's got like muscle on her, but she just has this thin beanstalk frame. And you don't need to get any closer than like 10 feet from her to just smell the moonshine that occasionally wafts off of her. As she's like kind of like stepping out of the barn, she's got like a shotgun crooked over one arm. It's one of the breech loading ones, so it's currently open with no shells in it. So she just has that crooked over one arm, not actively pointed at you or anything. Just a bit of casual intimidation as you come walking up on her property, I'd say that this is you'd know that this is Brandy Carson. She is the only living Carson around here, Mother Ruth, but was not living on this land when the farm collapsed. So she just, I don't think she knows you. I just think you know her by reputation just from living up here. And as you're approaching, Brandi Carson kind of like looks over at you and says, "Is there something I can help you with?
Heard of some troubles? Come to check on you. See if we of the Vigilance Committee could help you a hand."
"It's enough. It's not enough. Those reporters come out. Now you too." "Huh." She like just like spits to the side. "Look, I don't need you disturbing my property, all right? Or me for that matter. I don't have anything to offer or to give you. So just do us all, and me in particular, a favor by making yourself scarce."
"Madam, reporters report. The Vigilance Committee stands vigilant against troubles. Now, from what I be hearing, there are troubles along the roadway. Why, I heard of a woman on her way to a wedding walking down by a courier just earlier.
Well,
so,
I don't have any troubles myself. That is other people's concern. I ain't experiencing nothing, so I do not see how this involves me at all. I've told the same to that little shit, what's his name? Me looking. Little sit, Saul Ortega, as he came around asking questions about property for the paper. Nothing's happened. I ain't seen nothing. I got nothing to tell."
"You wouldn't be lying to a woman of the cloth now, would you?"
I think it's the day move. What are you afraid of happening here?
"Then I'm going to get R-U-N-N-O-F-T off her land."
Yeah, you can roll plus presence. Your most beloved. That's not going to give you disadvantage here.
That's a 4.
4. And so it happens that as she slides 2 shells into her shotgun and clicks it closed, not pointing it at you, but now it's clearly loaded, and she has her shotgun hanging in front of her as she goes,
"You wanna say that again? I'm not going to hear shit about Brandi Carson mistruthing. I am rightfully minding my business and my privacy on my property. I have every right to say to get the hell off my land as you do to get the fuck out of your church or whatever you fucking do. Okay?"
You can see now that despite her ancient appearance, there is a youth in Brandi Carson's expression that manifests through the slurring of her words. She can't be older than 50. Someone looks like she's like in her 80s or 90s just from sheer weathering. But like, clearly she's had a hard life. But she is, I think, younger than you, I'd assume. I don't know how old Mother Ruth is.
Mother Ruth's like 60.
Yeah, so she's like younger than you.
I'm going to go ahead and put on a mask.
Okay.
And that's going to be represented by that face, which you can see there is fire and brimstone behind the eyes. You see Mother Ruth. There's like a flash. And you see it's at nighttime. There are torches all around a field. There is a tent. You can see windmills turning in the distance. And you can see that there are a series of poor people. They're all wearing wide-brim black hats. The men are wearing black vests, buttoned-up collarless shirts. The women are wearing bonnets. They have on plain denim gowns and other things that befit work. And in the midst, You can see written in Dutch, there is the healing waters of Mother Ruth Calvo. Come and drink. And you see this woman in fiery Dutch yelling at these sinners about what they do with their spare time after they are working the fields, where they are working amongst wheat and tulips and all those other pleasantries. But instead of feeling the healing power of the Lord our God through this humble, hard work, they spend their hard-earned money on whoring, on drinking, and on tobacco. And you can see that there are men gathering these other workers and bringing them before her. And she takes this swill, this ladle of water, and then swishes it in her mouth and spits it in the face of these people. And then in Dutch, prays over them and holds a hand on their forehead and pushes them back, and a man will catch them. There is a speaking in tongues behind her, as you see there is a man around her age. And this is a young Ruth Calvo. This is about 20 years old Ruth Calvo. And you see within her those same eyes of fire and brimstone, but there is a joy. She is changing people's lives. She is bringing a difference to these sinners. And then just like that, it's gone. And we see that weathered face again. And Ruth Calvo just smiles and goes, "You're quite right, madam. Pardon me for trespassing. Just trying to get a sense of what's going on wrong around here and trying to do my best to help the neighbor. I'll be going now."
You can take the condition marked by Brandy Carson. She does not load the shotgun, but she did kind of give you the stink eye. But she just gives you a curt little nod. Back in town, Arkansas McGee, with your miss, here's what happens. You go running, like, truly as if someone cut the Sunday linens from their drying, you know, wire and just left it to the wind, just flapping and flailing and moving wildly about, stumbling over foot and just heel and ankle and just fully stomping down the boardwalk of Santa Fe Street. You go crashing past a salesman in the middle of the road, just totally destroying whatever he was putting on display as you go crashing through it. And the marshal hot on the heels of you as you stumble. You are swinging around your gun, not your gun, the gun that you should not have, and occasionally waving it behind you, yelling obscenities. And then you hit the edge of a boardwalk step that snags the tip of your boot. You go tumbling ass over tea kettle and hit the ground hard. A gunshot goes off, and then there's a terrible breaking sensation you feel for a moment. The gunshot is indeed, I'm going to have Marshall make a roll for this in a second, but...
I didn't have a miss. I got a success.
You got a success?
Yeah, yeah. 7 to 9.
Yeah, 7 to 9. So like, oh yeah. So I was about to say, like, it doesn't hit you. It won't hit you then. Hold on. Never mind. Let me rephrase. So the shot goes off, but it just goes off wildly. The complication I'm giving you is that, in your drunken stupor, as you like, are like, you know, I'm sure it's like the marshal will get up to you and like roll you over, you know, well, actually, no, you did succeed still just with the complication. That means you got away. It sounds like, so in that case, it's not that you, I'm going to say this, you lose him, right? You will lose him, in the pursuit, but it's while you're kind of like, after you lost him, you're stumbling around that you trip, fall, a gunshot goes off from just the impact. And then when you roll over and look down at yourself, you realize that you landed so hard on Blackheart's gun that it is now broken in half and you lose the item.
Or I put on a mask.
Or you put on a mask.
I put on a mask and I switch intoxicated to hungover.
Very good.
And instead, what we see is he can't stop vomiting. The marshal catches him, but he can't stop vomiting. And then he looks up at the marshal and he says, "God damn it, Marshal, I lost my buzz and dinner and possibly breakfast."
Well, good, because like we can't have you running around like that.
I don't think I can run anywhere anytime today. But I gotta tell you something, Marshal. I done heard about this Daisy man, and we gotta warn the bank. A bunch of fellers. This was last, had to be 2 years ago. A bunch of fellers were sitting around talking about the Daisy man, and they said that he can walk through mirrors. I don't know if he's a ghost or a person, but he can walk through mirrors. And if there's a mirror at the bank, we gotta take it down. And so that's my ghost stories move, and the clue is the Daisy man walks through mirrors.
Now you have the ghost bridge move, but you also have the vulnerable move resolution of, if you want an extra, you can ask for, you can get, do a clue, or you can ask, you can have Harrington ask you about your past.
I think I'm going to do that. That way, okay. I can use the clue from my move and then
gotcha.
Have Harrington ask me while I'm sitting here and puke. If you have any questions for me.
Why aren't you ever sober? Because listen, I know life's hard and whatnot, and you know that I've myself have gone through a lot, but I don't get drunk like this like you. What makes you different than me?
You probably aren't, I don't know, maybe you are, but I don't know what lies in the hearts of other men, Marshall. But you know how it is. I'm just drinking to forget.
Good. Graves, as the result of your miss that you rolled, James narrows his eyes at you, at your questions, and his lips press into a bit of a thin line as his chin tilts up and he clasps his hands behind his back. He says, "I've not seen anyone acting suspicious or strange, save for a pale gentleman entering my yet-to-be-open establishment and asking pointed questions about security measures and the money I store in my bank."
I see what you're getting at, but, sir, I assure you, I'm with the Vigilance Committee. I have no interest in your earthly goods.
As you've said, I have nothing more to offer you. The bank is quite capable. You can take, so because of your miss, you'll take the condition marked by, I mean, that's just my favorite go-to condition for this. It's like marked by James, what's his name? Marked by James Martin. Okay. And he is basically like, because it's a miss, it's like you're shutting down. Like, you know, he is like, you can go now. Like, goodbye. Get out.
Graves will take the hint. I don't think this is worth a mask. Not quite yet.
All right. Then you step out back on a Santa Fe street. Let's paint the scene. This wide street crosses the busy San Francisco street in the middle of El Paso. For several hundred yards on both sides of the street is a wooden boardwalk in front of businesses. A salesman has a small windmill set up, or had a small windmill set up after Arkansas stumbled through it, and is trying to catch people's attention. Let's paint the scene. Looking at his wagon, how can you tell the salesman is just passing through?
I think he's got enough wares that there's not enough people in El Paso to even buy it all. So he's going to have to move on somewhere else to sell it, because there's not enough people here to buy his product.
You can see a big steamer trunk kind of stored in the back, and it's got stickers from all over these continental United States and maybe some other places that are a little bit further away. He's clearly well-traveled.
The obvious answer, the entire cart is on wheels and he does not ever put down its kickstand.
There is an old Chinese man that is sitting on the back that helps keep stock of all the items and deals all the handling of customers. That's saying, from New York to San Francisco, all these wares and more. We're not headed to New York, though, so you can guess where we go next. So you can follow along or grab it while you can.
Very good. Graves, as you stand out on the street, surveying the scene, a moment later, a woman's voice comes to you from the side. You glance over and you see a woman from the assemblage last night. It's Agatha Edwards, the owner of, and editor of the El Paso Times. And she it comes like walking over to you. She had said, oh, Mr. Graves, and it clunk, 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 her shoes like clattering against the boardwalk. She pulls out her pocket watch, like flips it open, checks it, looks at it, and then clicks it back and tucks it away and says, Mr. Graves, Agatha Edwards, the El Paso Times. I was hoping to steal your ear for a moment if you could lend a story or two to the papers. I have a great deal of questions I've been hoping to ask you. How is your recovery going?
Oh, I'm doing perfectly fine, Miss Edwards.
Now, am I mistaken in seeing that as I turned the corner onto Santa Fe Street, I saw you, Mr. Graves, walking out of the First Bank of El Paso? Now, I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but several stories have been trickling down through our fair township about these phantom burglars. Really quite something, isn't it? I was hoping I could get your insight on it. You know, some of the bigger regional papers have already expressed an interest in the reporting we're doing, and I even got a telegram from New York City. Can you believe it? This is the one that is going to put us on the map, I tell you, the paper and the town. So your stories are more than useful to ensuring the journalistic integrity of the El Paso Times reporting on this strange and nefarious case.
Well, maybe we can do some favors for each other, hmm?
She quirks an eyebrow and says, well, I'm more than listening, Mr. Graves.
You tell me what you know, I'll tell you what I know. You keep an eye out for interesting things. And I tell you the interesting things I see.
Make the information move plus presence, Graves. No disadvantage on this one.
Jesus Louises, that's a two. Can I?
I'll narrate the outcome for a second. And she's, I think here's what your complication is, because I think it's fucking funny. Is like she, Yeah, I know what I'm doing. She, like, gives, like, hearty guffawing laugh, and she says, oh, Mr. Graves, I do believe you and I have an arrangement that can be made. I was thinking that you and I could head over to the El Paso Times office, have a sit, I can brew us a cup of coffee or two, and you can prattle on about everything you want to tell me, and I can tell you whatever it is you'd like to hear, and we can compare notes. I keep a great deal of notes at the El Paso Times. Don't you worry, pretty little face. And she reaches up and squeezes your cheek with her bare hands.
Holy fuck.
And because she has touched you, she will die right now or later today unless you actively try to prevent their death with a yeah. Or if you want them to die, you know, I have options I can do. But either way, that is your complication on the miss. She reaches up and she touches your cheek. Bare skin, bare skin.
Shit. That's so good. It's almost so good I almost don't want to mark a mask, but I don't know how useful this character is. Do we have any votes from around the table, since this might affect the rest of us?
Fight for your life and save them.
In one of my games, we destroyed her office and threatened her, and then turned her over to the bootstrapper, turned her over to the mastermind.
Good Christ!
I will note that in when I played the Inevitable last time, the GM was kind enough to tell me how they would die, and it was up to me to find out how to prevent that.
Okay, I'll tell you this then, because I feel like I love the drama of it. Is after pinching your cheek, she's gonna turn on her heel, she's gonna walk down toward, like, you know, to lead towards her office. She will take five steps and then collapses. Her heart stops.
Wowzer Bowsers. I'm not sure I can do anything about that as death.
You can.
Unless,
Yeah,
I think I can.
Yeah, they just help. Well, yeah, they just help. I just want to hear how you would try to stop that.
I know how. How? Actually, I think I've moved for this. I think as she grabs Graves' cheek, his eyes widen, almost startled that she has done this thing. And as she turns, he takes her by the shoulder and turns her around and says, actually, I think we can meet somewhere else. Why don't we play a game? And I'm going to use the move care for a game.
Well,
and if I play a game with a side character, I can prevent them dying for one day cycle. Is that potential, or does she die too fast?
Well, you haven't played the game yet, and we've already set the stake that she's going to die when she walks 5 steps away from you.
That's true.
That's a great thing. That's great for if I tell you that someone's going to die later in the day. But
that's true.
In this situation, I need to hear either you mark a mass to bump up that result, or you have to think of some way, supernaturally or otherwise, that you are staving off her fate. I'll let you stew on that for a moment.
Yes.
We jump back.
Let's go to someone else.
What is Marshall Harrington doing after that whole sequence with Arkansas?
It seems that Arkansas has sobered up enough to not be a menace to the town for now. So I'll let him wander off. And I think, I probably should go and find Graves, because like we haven't had really much of a conversation, and I really don't want to talk to Mother Ruth about them sort of effectively skedaddling midway through the assemblage a few nights ago.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can get an answer of Graves.
As you're walking down through the streets, you hear a man say, "Oh, excuse me, Marshall Harrington. Hi, a word, Saul Ortega." He goes, "Saul Ortega, El Paso Times." Well, I'm not with the El Paso. I'm trying to. Sorry, let me. This is a very peppy gentleman. Clothes are getting a little frayed and worn at the edges, but are otherwise pretty well kept. He does not seem to have any visible way of taking notes. He just goes, "Yep, hi. I'm not sure if you know me, Marshall Harrington, Saul Ortega. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to break into journalism, trying to show."
I remember you. You tried to talk to me the other week.
Yes.
Have you gotten yourself a notepad yet?
Well, not quite yet, but listen, I've taken the time to learn my letters, and now I hope Miss Edwards over at the Times will give me a shot. I just need to write up a real good story, or at least something uncover something that's worth writing about. So my next step is to get a notebook once I have something worthy to write about. So, that's why I wanted to stop you, because I didn't get really the chance to interject with any of my questions at the assemblage a few nights ago, and I was hoping to corner you because talking about the Wounded Knight. So I think that is the single most interesting topic our town can address at this moment. What do you know about this Wounded Knight business? Because I'm fascinated. Any stories you'd have to share? I would love to bend your ear, and it might help me out a lot, Marshall.
So, Ortega, I think this may be a little bit too much for you. As you know, I am the marshal of this town, and you should know that I will stop at nothing to make sure that justice is delivered to both the living and the dead, as the marshal previously did before me.
Oh, that's a good line. That's a great line. I can put that in a quote. Mm-hmm. I can quote you. That'll look real good. Justice for the living and the dead. I can see. Oh, headlines, Marshall. That's great. It's great stuff. I have a few more questions. It's going to be the day move to extricate yourself from this situation, it sounds like, because he is annoyingly pressing on. What are you afraid of happening here?
I'm afraid that Harrington will get so annoyed by like all these questions that he is going to do something that he'll regret and possibly hurt Ortega in the process.
Sounds like plus composure then. Go ahead and roll.
Yeah. God damn, I don't know what's with my dice this campaign, but that's a 10.
All right, 10 total. Very good. Just r resolve the scene, narrate what happens, and then move on, and we can segue to elsewhere.
Ortega.
Saul, please. You can call me Saul Marshall.
Mr. Ortega, you have to r realize that there's a certain level of decorum you must have.
Decorum.
Otherwise, your
Yes, good
justice
word.
won't
Very good
be worth
word.
its salt because you need to know when to shut up in front of very dangerous folk because they could hurt you at a moment's notice. And they may not care because their end goals are more important than individual lives.
That's a
And that is.
very, very good point, Marshall. We do live in a pretty rowdy town, all things considered, not the worst in the West, but by no means frivolous or prone to everyday comforts and generosities and courtesies. Yes, you're right. You know what? I'm going to find a mirror and I'm going to practice my listening face. Thanks, Marshall. And goes skipping off down the boardwalk. And then he shouts back from down the street, "Justice for the living and the dead!" And he goes around the corner. Very good. You're going to go meet up with Graves. You're going to find Graves once we resolve Graves' thing here in a moment. But Mother Ruth, what are you doing after you're getting kind of like walking off from the barn scene?
I'm going to go check the fields.
Okay.
I've been chased away, but I'm going to be leaving. But I'm going to go investigate in the fields and see if there's any sign of this lady in white or any kind of connection here, and then make my way back to town.
Yeah, I mean, this neglected field is out behind the homestead that is mostly fallow, but with some sporadic unharvested growths. At the end of the field, you can see a 6-foot-long depression in the dirt where plants seem to wither and die. Let's paint the scene. What makes you think this field is a grave?
There's a single flower on that 6-foot mound of dirt, and it looks fresh.
The ground on the 6-foot plot, the ground has sunk down, I don't know, 6 to 10 inches, which is probably due to the decomposition of the casket and body.
The grass is dead all around here. Tain't nothing growing around.
Mother Ruth, as you walk into this area, you can see the breath on the air. There's something nearby.
Mother Ruth, passing by the field, I'd like you to make the information move plus reason with disadvantage because Brandy Carson's kind of watching you leave. So I imagine you're playing it like you're walking by the field as you leave her land and taking the opportunity to glance and look, but she has got her eyes on you. Inebriated she may be, but that'll be disadvantage.
Will you allow me to mark my fake Bible that has a secret compartment? Because as we see Mother Ruth investigating but pulling it out and reading it, her
Oh, I like
hand
that.
is placed on like a derringer that's inside. So if this woman attacks her, there
I
will be
like that.
recompense.
Yeah, I like that. In that case, I'm go with that framing, I will require you to roll with composure instead, because there's that it brings an element of focus to the scene that otherwise wouldn't be there. But you have advantage, or well, flat roll because mitigated.
That is a 10.
10 flat 10. Very good. I'll give you a clue. I think, unless there's anything else you wanted, we will wrap the day phase for you, Mother Ruth, and then find a thing or two more to wrap up the day phase with the rest of us. Let's see. Which clue am I going to give you? I'm going to give you a weird one. It's just that as you walk by the neglected field, pretending to read from your Bible, keeping your wits about you in case Brandy Carson decides to get a little happy with that trigger finger. The sunlight glints off of a spider web that has kind of been built, you know, in between the wooden fence posts, and the spider on it, about half as big as your palm, is just dancing along its web. It appears to be dancing. It has this kind of like grace to its movements along the web. So that's your clue. A spider appears to be dancing along its web. And you begin to walk past the land. And as you're leaving, it takes you a moment to realize, but you catch yourself. You were singing a song softly to yourself. You don't remember what the song was, only that you stopped now. And you continue on your walk. Graves, have you decided what you're going to do?
Yes, I am going to mark a mask because I feel this might be necessary.
All right, which mask are you marking?
The first mask of the past.
Do you want to narrate that now or do you want to hold off?
I can narrate it now.
Go ahead.
Because I think as Graves, I imagine maybe dodges her touch just barely and for a second remembers what they are. They've been caught up in this sort of human experience for a while. But that's not what Graves is. In fact, they've existed for millennia, back when there are no words for what we are yet. There are no words for anything. There is nothing but heat and darkness and my sibling in me. I watch famine do their slow, agonizing work. Creatures of flesh and fur, of scale and feather, all wither equally under their touch. And equally I go with them, one by one, to lead them on to what comes next. Someday, you humans will call this the Great Dying. Not knowing that there are many great dyings to come.
Instead, what happens is as you dodge her little touch, she doesn't seem all too bothered by that, but she says, I think that is a splendid idea, Mr. Graves. Tell you what, why don't you come by the office at your soonest convenience and I'll have the time for you and you and I can discuss and share notes. So your complication is simply going to be that you will not be able to get this clue or have it count for the mystery until you go to the El Paso Times office during the next day phase. So that is the arrangement. This clue will become accessible to you if you go to the El Paso Times office during the next day phase. If you miss the appointment, Sweet. You lose access to the clue.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. Very good. All right. And by this time, I think Marshall Harrington can find you at some point. I wanted to check with Arkansas. You had done your vulnerable move. Was there anything else you were thinking about doing today before we wrap up on your day phase?
Yeah, he was wanting to report back to Graves as well.
And tell you what.
Vulnerable scene there. So
I love that. You know what? Then we can have a two-pronged thing. We'll do... We'll resolve whatever Harrington and Graves want to do, and then we can segue into that, and that'll be our day phase. So, Graves, where are you when Harrington later finds you during the afternoon?
I think I'm actually walking through the town, just kind of surveying the place, and not really doing anything in particular that is, like, I'm not in a place, but I do find myself sort of near Neil's, maybe as a... almost like a muscle memory, but I'm not inside.
Yeah, I think sort of out of the corner of your eye, Harrington appears. Hello, Graves.
Marshall, how are you?
I'm doing well. I have some questions. Just curious about sort of the happenings going on, especially with you being, have been injured.
It seems that's sort of a theme today. I'm fine, perfectly fine, I assure you, Marshal.
Are you sure? You seem... I just have a particular question. Something I noticed the other day. I, to be frank, I didn't expect much about Mr. McGee attending the assemblage and whatnot, because he's a bit of a mess, honestly speaking, and I just hope that he's hung over more often than he is intoxicated in town, because he's a little bit menace when he gets like that. But you, Graves, you are the responsible one.
Oh, am I?
Yes, yeah, so I did notice that you did show up to the assemblage with Mother Ruth, but then
of course
you two quickly disappeared after I was done talking.
Well, you were done talking. That was what I was there for, and I imagine Mother Ruth felt the same.
Really, though?
You're the only interesting person there, I'm going to be honest with you. Everyone else, even your lovely, lovely deputy, didn't have anything interesting to say. But did we miss anything? Did I leave too soon?
Yes, you did miss sort of the announcement from Miss Reynolds saying that that her plans for a railroad is underway, so they should be building that soon. I'm just wondering, what did you do when you wandered off? Because you couldn't have wandered off far, because as I was heading home, I noticed that you were leaving the building as well, so.
Nothing you would be interested in, Marshall. Some theology talks, you know how Mother Ruth gets, and I find myself interested in theology these days.
Keep using that word. I'm not sure if you actually know what it means, but I know. We all have our vices. Mine being a little bit of a sticky fingers, but I'm not sure quite what is yours.
You know I love games, Marshall. That's all.
Huh.
Maybe we should play one sometime.
Sure, why not? And the Marshall pulls out a coin.
Huh.
I'm more of a man of a gambling games, as it were. Oh. Random chance. Heads, you tell me exactly what you got up to last the assemblage. Tails, you get to ask me a question.
Huh. You know, Marshall, I'm not a gambling man. I like games of skill.
That's the funniest fucking thing to you, Harrington, that you know.
Yes, that's the most ridiculous.
That is silly as shit. And also probably weird. That is either absurd or deeply weird. I don't know how you'll interpret that, but that is hilarious coming from Graves.
Yes, it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, I think with that, there is just a slight spark. You can see the eye of just like, Harrington will remember this. but frankly, I think this requires a dame move because Harrington is going to cheat.
I think that's fun. Go ahead and do it. What are you afraid of happening here?
Grace will catch me cheating.
That's fair. You can roll plus composure.
Let's go. That is an 8.
Okay. I feel like if it's okay for me to say, B, you feel free to intercede.
Whatever you want to do, man. I'm here for it.
Here's how you'll be vulnerable, Harrington, right? Is that you're going to do this trick once, right? And you will fool Graves, you will feel death this time, right? But Those eyes that are currently in Bartholomew's head are very keen, very intelligent. They'll watch carefully and they might come to deconstruct how you manage your tricks, and you won't be able to cheat them again like this again. You'll take the condition, can't cheat death.
Good.
As good as that condition is, I really need to like mark a mask of my past.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So mark that. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. So.
Do you want to narrate that scene now, or do you want to hold off?
I won't narrate my mask of the past right now.
That's fine. Then go ahead and narrate what happens.
I think as sort of I show you heads and then the tails, I clasp my hands together and say, are you ready?
If you insist, Marshall, let's play.
And I replace the coin with a sort of sleight of hand with a coin that has heads on both sides.
Love it, you and, motherfucker.
And I flip it down and show you its heads, of course.
Well, I'm a man of my word. Ruth and I did spend some time together last night. I don't think you need that many details. I think you can fill them in. Can't you?
Yes.
I don't see why you're so curious about this, though.
I don't know. Something's off about your graves. You didn't come back quite right. I can't figure out why. But I'm glad that you got distracted. At least there's some normalcy there.
You know, Marshall, I think you're the first person to notice that without me telling them. And for that, I applaud you.
Well, Graves, you can clear a condition from this scene, it sounds like, because you have a condition here. Which condition are you clearing?
Limerence might make more sense just because I haven't done anything to not be marked by that dude.
Mm, sure.
And what do you think, though?
I think limerence is fine. I mean, like, it's kind of, like, shaken off of the residual vibes from your interactions with Ruth. That's fine. How do you want to wrap up the scene?
Since technically speaking, it was my vice of mentioning petty theft, I will allow Grace to ask a question.
All right. You know, Marshall, I think you're a very interesting person. I wonder, how did you get here, of all places?
I think it's complicated, honestly, but I've had many sorts of jobs in my life, and some of them went wrong. And you have to leave when they've gone too wrong. But in particular, I think the really big moment is to why I came to the States. Like moving entire countries, entire continents away. I think the moment I really solidify that is when I met my father for the first time.
Is he from here?
No, he never really spoke about where he was from, but it was London at the time. And for all of my bad habits, cruelty, he was much worse, and that scared me.
Fascinating.
It's a good wrap on the scene. I know that Arkansas, you wanted to get a vulnerable movement as well. Was that with Graves or with Calvo?
It was with Graves. I think I can do it pretty quickly. As soon
Okay,
as
yeah,
like
sure.
the, as soon as like Harrington, as soon as they part ways, Graves hears like a whistling sound, and as Death knows that that's a knife. There's a knife whistling through the air. Not at Graves, but it lands a few feet away, and then there's like a rusty fork, and when you turn, you see Arkansas, and he's like throwing like sharp implements up into the sky, and as he's walking towards you, and
Huh.
he said, "I also have a prowess with the bladed weapons, and I like to practice." The marshal took away my privileges of firing in the
What
town.
a
But anyway,
shame.
he's picking up his rusty fork and his knife. He's like, "Graves, you're not
Arkansas.
going to this establishment that you are looking at. I don't know if that's where you're planning on going, but don't go in there. There's fellas in there, I think, want to do you harm. Not the owner. I think
Possibly.
he's okay, but
Oh,
there's some guys in
interesting.
there that might have been responsible for shooting you up."
Is that so?
Yeah, and it's probably
Huh.
for running your goddamn mouth. That's probably what got you shot.
You would know a lot about that, wouldn't you, Arkansas?
I hear you talk all the time, but look at we got to hold this together. We can't be getting shot up on side dealings with these nefarious fellas.
That's fair. That's fair. That would impede our work. I'll try not to get shot again. And you try not to get shot again or hit with one of your many sharp implements.
I'm a marksman. I learned a lot on the trails. My head right now is about to explode, but there's a time when I rode with Black Heart Vermilion, and she taught me how to throw this so I could hit a target maybe 20 feet away.
Really?
No, I just like to say that, I'm just warning you about this establishment over here.
This one, right here. I don't need
Yeah.
to go in it.
Well, I mean, if you do, you might come out with a couple extra holes.
I'll take note of that. I will take note of that. And I did do a little bit of pre-investigation in a different establishment with this Daisy man fellow. The banker is not very open-minded, just be warned.
That's my specialty. The banks here love me. They love me.
Oh, really?
I will do a talk with this fella in the first thing in the morning. It's probably not banker hours, but I can get through to this guy. I can. Yeah, the banks here love me. They love me on account
Really?
of all the good work that I've done as a citizen, helping out with. God damn, my head hurts.
Maybe you should go rest, Arkansas.
Nope.
I don't.
Yep,
No?
nope, nope,
No.
nope. He pulls out this canteen. This is do the trick. And he starts he takes a big drink out of it, and the fumes, you can smell the fumes. And
Very
call it
good.
good.
All right. Clue or question, Arkansas?
I'm gonna go with Clue this time.
All right, go ahead. You can clear one of your conditions. Well, the only condition you can clear is Brown Noser. And you can clear Marked by James Martin Graves if you feel like you're suitably can justify that, which I think you can.
All right, I'll
Okay.
do that.
We are, I think that'll bring our day phase to a close. We're gonna move to the dusk. Before we do stars and wishes, I do want to ask if the group has any interest in answering a question. You have 9 clues for the lady in white. Do we feel like we want to answer that now or at the start of next session? Now? Getting some folks looking like a now thing? Yeah? Okay. Well, let's review the clues and the question. The question is complexity 6. How can we get the lady in white to pass on to the next world? The 9 clues you have available. The ghost is trying to communicate a great sadness, a chicken that had been decapitated. That you'd followed the trail of blood for from the wagon. Fresh rose petals that look like blood found in the bodies of the wagon drivers. Recent fog on the foothills road, not from the river. Wagon wheel broken with great violence, like exploded. a raven chewing at a red ribbon, an omen, a Chihuahuan raven. The woman in white riding a wagon and the witness cannot recall when she hopped off. She had paid Arkansas a dented silver ring with a pearl, and Mother Ruth took note of a spider web dancing across its web out by the neglected field behind the Carson homestead. Do we feel like we need a quick, like 3 minutes to form something, or do y'all have a theory you want to jump into?
Wes, you're muted.
I've got something. So yeah, the push to talk feature doesn't work very well on Zoom. Sometimes it don't push when it, you know, you gotta talk. So I'm thinking, woman in white riding a wagon, it cannot be recalled when she hopped off. To bring her forward for this ritual, you have to lure her with a traveler along the road leading to the Carson farm and everything. That wagon wheel, the best way to lure it is probably having that wagon break down, having the wagon wheel broken with great violence, something that might invoke frustration of that need. We must do it at a time when there is fog on the road, though it cannot be from the river. You must gather a collection of fresh rose petals that are as red as blood. You must tie a red ribbon around a circle, drawing birds to chew on it. We must use that dented silver ring with a pearl because it must belong to her because it's her engagement ring. And then bring a chicken head along with the chicken that's been decapitated to replace something that has been lost. And then make a dance around that red ribbon circle with the rose petals, much like a spider dancing on the web, for in order to bring her forward and communicate with her what is making her greatly sad, a great sadness, so that she may pass on from this world.
Well, that's all nine. I have some questions, but I'll get to those in a second. I mean, Daniel B. Chaotic, do you have any thoughts or stuff to add to that?
No, that was very good job, Wes.
Impressively so, yeah.
I live with a witch.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I have a couple of questions. I like most of that. The chicken that had been decapitated, you have to bring the chicken head or something. So I guess my question is, like, that thing had been, like, dragged away and, like, that cage was pried open and the chicken's head was cut off, which, so, like, I guess, like, what is the relevance of the chicken head? Because that was, like, that was a strange situation that you found. I'm not sure I quite see how connects to the...
I can clear that up.
Yeah.
The way she was killed is in a wagon crash where she was decapitated.
Oh, okay. Yep. That's a really good detail.
Replacing what has been lost.
Okay. That's great. Okay. This is fascinating. I don't actually have any issues with this. I have a lot of thoughts, but I'll save those for stars and wishes because I think it's worthy of some stars. That's going to be a +3 to the roll. So I feel like Mother Ruth, you just take it away, honestly, because you carried that theory if you want to roll. So you'll have a +3 to it. The theory is correct, and the masterminds will show up at some point during the resolution. Now, someone make a note of that in the keeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fun fact, there is a notes section now.
Yes, there is. And there's always been, there was a note section on the other one too. All right. And I think with that, we'll save the rest of the dust craze for next time. Let's go to stars and wishes. We can keep it Not like super fast, but on the relative quicker side, because I know that we're going to lose Daniel in a little bit. I want to make sure that we all get out of here on time. So whoever wants to go first, take it away. Actually, I lied. I'll start. So, I mean, like, I'll just throw out there like the quick ones that are immediately on my mind, even though I have plenty more positive things to say about this session. Writing immediately from the coattails, the theory. So interesting stars, right? Starting that theory because it's, The question being, how can we get the Lady in White to pass on to the next world? What Wes and y'all just did is objectively answering that question. And the first time in even like a game like even like the Between or Public Access that have had these like kind of like questions about this, that, like, even though the question isn't asking you to explain the nature of a thing, normally people do still do add a lot of detail about, like, the involved threat or whatever. This was, with the exception of establishing that, like, she was decapitated in a wagon crash and, like, something involving her, you know, maybe, like, on her wedding day. I don't know. Like, that is, like, that's left vague enough because the answer to the question was, here's the ritual we have to do to set it up. And, like, I think that's worthy of stars because very few people in tables I've been to have actually just done the approach where it's, like, we are not really explaining the nature of this thing at all. We're just answering, in strict terms, the question of, here's how we're doing that. Mechanically, it's not like, here's all of these things that represent this. Just, here's the oblique ritual we need to perform. So that's a star to that. I think that's pretty great. The other star I'll add there now, I might throw in a couple more after y'all do your rounds at the end. This game so far is very subdued. And that's a star. Now, because it is, you know, very much in keeping with the Between. It has that brooding, dark place. But unlike the Between's gothic, busy, bustling London monster hunting setting, this is very Deadwood. This is a lot. So far, it's a lot of conversations. It's a lot of scenes of people doing things in their daily lives, having interactions. And it will get action-packed at times, sure. But it's very different than the Between's vibe, I think. And I kind of like it. We have the prestige HBO Western drama that just so happens to involve ghosts, right? Like, this is not like The Between, which is like, this is Penny Dreadful, you know? This is like, we are a gritty, hard Western with, like, brooding, interesting character dynamics and exploring sexy interactions and, like, the grungy aspects of the West. And there happens to be ghosts as well, which I don't know. So far, it's like, I'm really enjoying the vibe, especially because we named this campaign Near Enough to Hell. It feels like the vibe is very much on that, like, dark countryside of, like, we got the vibe of, like, you know, there's sand in your teeth and it's everything kind of just smells of sweat and wood a little bit and maybe a little blood. I don't know. I don't really know how to describe it much better. It's just like, so far, the vibe is very subdued in a way that I'm enjoying quite a bit. But I'll save any of the other comments I might have until after y'all have shared some stars and wishes as well.
I'll go next just in case I have to bolt. So stars for Alex. I lost count at, like, nine side characters you did today, like nine distinct side characters. And I know I'm probably leaving somebody off the list. I'm not going to go through them for time. But I really like the condition you gave that was avoided with a mask. Can't cheat death. That was a really cool condition. Brother Calvo, I'm gonna go ahead and say it before somebody else does. It was like startling. It's like Mother Calvo at night is like a startling change. And it's the spicy side. And I'm going ahead and putting it down as well as I always like when people do creative things with their personal items and using the pistol just in case Brandy tried something. Was great. I really like that. For Harrington, I feel like Harrington is a little, like, you know, sketchy, but I feel like Harrington's, like, working for El Paso. Like, I feel like he's like a civil servant. Like, he's working for El Paso. Justice for the dying, the living and the dying was good. And then Saul took off with it. And star for the first interaction with the mastermind was Harrington. And for Graves, the Great Dying was a cool mask. I didn't just and then the quote, I didn't just get close to death. I am. That was good. And so I'll stop there. I've got plenty more. If you want more, I'll tell you more, but I'll stop there.
Well, you know, I'm always down to gush about everybody's all the time. Oh my gosh. Alex, your voice is just delicious. You really got to show it off. Like Daniel said, you had a lot of side characters and it was so good. The mastermind introduction was delicious. Oof, tasty. The bursting open of the doors, the drama, the dude who has clearly been hung. That's so sick. Oh my God. Arkansas and Harrington's chase scene was maybe my favorite thing. That was so ridiculous. I fucking love you guys. That was delightful. Delightful, delightful, delightful. Arkansas's, the way you work in your vulnerable move thing, you instead when your gun got taken away, you were doing knives. That's amazing. I love just Arkansas's hilarious. I love him. He feels so exactly like the name of the playbook, The Calamity. Like, he definitely embodies this outlaw vibe that is just, ugh, delicious, delicious. And I also agree with Daniel. Harrington is just a little bit menacing, a little bit sketchy, and I'm absolutely into it. It's so, what an interesting direction for the marshal of the town. Like, I want to know what the hell you're up to. And I really like also the way you worked in the thing where you're talking about your predecessor. Thinking about that person while you were looking at the mastermind. That was fabulous. That was a really cool way to do that. Mother Ruth Calvo, that was spicy. But also, it fabulous, delightful, very Deadwood. I love that she has a derringer. This woman has a gun. And your mask was so good. It was so cool. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely delicious. Just, I could have listened to more of that story. I could have listened to like the rest of her life story because she's such an interesting character. And I'll shut up now so we can actually have other people talk.
Yeah, I have to give a star for Mother Calvo for triggering her vice with death of all people. Like, oh my god, I figured it would be either like Harrington or McGee, but Graves? Oh my. But I'm looking forward to like having more scenes with Mother Calvo, as well as like just see like how her relationship is with the other crew. Just like I really want to know like what goes, like how she views, like she feels like she's actually the one in control of El Paso, because like she at the very least like has like some sort of hold over Harrington through religious means, Graves obviously through a personal relationship, and I don't think McGee can outrank her. So, but but Harrington's a bad dude, and I just love it. He would have killed Amanda out in broad daylight. I will not be wrong about that. So, in the name of justice. So yeah. So that's gonna be fun. I love chasing Arkansas McGee through town, and just like saying like, okay, he has sobered up enough for me to let him go because he's too riley otherwise. Like, just that scene with Graves. I need to cheat at death. I could not allow that to happen. And I'm just like, it's fun. Just a lot of PvP like in this game so far, and I love it.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and say Arkansas McGee is one of my favorites of all time now. I love that guy. Calamity Jane is one of my favorite characters from Deadwood. I believe it's Margot Martindale that plays Calamity Jane in Deadwood, but such a distinct and terribly sad character, and I can see shades of that with Arkansas.
Weigert? Yeah, one of those.
Yeah, one of those very excellent women character actors that's like along in that stable along with Margot Martindale and everything. But such a I get shades of that with Arkansas, but it's distinctly your own thing. The scene of being drunk after having the scene with the lady in white, fantastic stuff, beautiful stuff. It was so cinematic. I could see it happening in a television show or a movie. And then the scene with Harrington afterwards of chasing around the town drunk and everything while firing guns off into the sky. It gave me shades of the Modest Mouse song, Cowboy Dan. If you haven't heard it, listen to it. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's heart-wrenching. It's sad. But yeah, just I love Arkansas. Harrington, chaotic. Assemblage went about as expected. Apologies that I could not make it and see what was going on. There are other more pressing matters that I had to attend to. But I'm sure you did a fantastic job. No, you did a fantastic job. A great scene with the Reynolds as well. Just a great introduction. Alex, fantastic introduction of the Reynolds. I love the idea. Very much has that feeling of Hearst from Deadwood, of like this person that just, these people that just walk into town. And it's not a big bad guy. There's no killing anybody or anything like that. It's just sometimes the villains walk plainly in the middle of the night or in the middle of the day and just do whatever the fuck they want because they have money or they have the authority to do so. And I felt that with them. So I can't wait to see what comes of them more. I can't wait to see how they interact with us during the Lady in the White resolution. B. Truly, truly, there are things that are parameters for myself that I feel comfortable with role playing with certain people. It's either our characters have to fight or they have to fuck in some way to know that I am truly comfortable with you. So welcome. Welcome to a stable of wonderful, wonderful role players I've got to play with. Now Graves is fantastic and that whole scene was wonderful. And I can just imagine it. I've probably been in those scenes. I've dated philosophy majors before where they say fucking Nietzsche shit like that. And it's just like, yeah, okay, let me just give you a rub and tug real quick to get you to calm down there, Nietzsche. It's fine. Great. I felt so comfortable during that scene. You're a wonderful scene partner during that. It was fantastic. Also A plus for the gloves. Alex. Fantastic stuff through and through. The pacing of this was wonderful. I felt like we all understood what we were getting into with this second session. There were no hiccups. I feel like we're so comfortable with each other, and that's like you've brought together a wonderful group of role players that I look forward to every Wednesday playing with. Brand's like, are you ever going to get tired of playing like during the day? And I'm like, no. I was like, I love it. It's fantastic. I start my day off right. And so, yeah, I can't wait for what more comes from this group. And wishes. Who's getting tugged next? That's my question. Who's next? Is it Harrington? Is it Arkansas? Who knows? We'll see.
Any other stars or wishes? All right. Well, I know Daniel's got to go. And so I will not take a, we have a stinger scene to end on. Daniel wrote it, so it's not the biggest loss in the world, but I'll go ahead and start that. And so before we go, bye, Daniel. We see Isabella and Edward lounging in a bed in a small but lavish room. Everything is soft in velvet. She pours a glass of champagne from a bottle she brought for the occasion. You see, she has just finished explaining her plan to Edward. He seems agitated but excited as he takes the glass from her.
So I could be free.
That's the plan, she smiles, pouring herself a glass.
The committee will try and get in the way. And the witnesses, they've got to go.
We can take care of them. Let's just stick to the plan. They toast, ting, as the camera pans out the window, showing them to be in the caboose compartments of a long black train on no track as it moves silently atop the waters of the misty Rio Grande under the light of the blood red moon.